Hello and welcome to another episode of Twimmel Talk, the podcast where I interview interesting people doing interesting things in machine learning and artificial intelligence. I'm your host, Sam Charrington. To close out 2018 and open the new year, we're excited to present to you our first ever AI Rewind series. In this series, I interview friends of the show for their perspectives on the key developments of 2018, as well as a look ahead at the year to come. We'll cover a few key categories this year, namely computer vision, natural language processing, deep learning, machine learning, and reinforcement learning. Of course, we realize that there are many more possible categories than these, that there's a ton of overlap between these topics, and that no single interview could hope to cover everything important in any of these areas. Nonetheless, we're pleased to present these talks and invite you to share your own perspectives by commenting on the series page at twimmelai.com/rewind18. In this episode of our AI Rewind series, we've brought back recent guest Sebastian Reuter, PhD student at the National University of Ireland and research scientist at Alien, to discuss trends in natural language processing in 2018 and beyond. In our conversation, Sebastian covers a bunch of interesting papers spanning topics such as pre-trained language models, common sense inference datasets, large document reasoning, and more, and talks through his predictions for the new year. Enjoy. All right, everyone, I am on the line with Sebastian Reuter. You may remember Sebastian from our recent conversation in Twimmel Talk number 195. Sebastian's a PhD student in natural language processing at the National University of Ireland, as well as a research scientist at Alien. Sebastian, welcome back to Twimmel.
Thanks, Sam. Great to be back.
Absolutely. So, as folks should know by now, we're doing something special for kind of the end of year, beginning of the year, talking with mostly returning guests, but some new guests about what they found interesting in their field in 2018 and what they expect to see in the new year. This is kind of an interesting conversation for us to have because our last conversation was kind of this like long-term look back in time for natural language processing. But now we'll kind of focus in on the past year, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what your kind of top developments were in the field. So why don't we jump in and start with some of the papers that you thought were interesting this year?
Sure. Yeah. So I think we can start. Yeah. Let's maybe just start with a very uncontroversial one, I think, which is probably on a lot of people's highlights list as well. So that is the paper on Elmo that won the Best Paper Award at NACL NLP conference in the summer this year on deep contextualized word representations. And I think that particular paper is remarkable for a lot of people. Just because it was one of the first which really demonstrated how useful these pre-trained language model representations can be on a very diverse array of tasks. And so I think for completeness, we should definitely mention that paper here. And for me personally, I just would like to highlight some additional aspects. Maybe people don't really, maybe might not remember, given those really superb empirical results, which are that, I personally found that the empirical analysis and the experiments in the paper were really exceptionally well done. And I really found that particular section of the paper really a pleasant experience to read, particularly because I found that the authors really tried actually to really make a good effort at understanding what is really going on in the network and what those particular layers in the model are actually learning. And in particular, I really liked the experiments they did on word sense disambiguation and part of speech tagging, where they essentially took the features learned in the first and the second layer of this bidirectional LSTM language model and just compared that to essentially really state-of-the-art models on both those tasks. And we're really able to show that just by training this deep language model on a lot of data, you get representations that really come very close to the state-of-the-art on tasks that have been widely researched. And secondly, that highlights also that kind of a difference between the layers, that in the first layer, you would kind of get better performance on this part of speech tagging, so this more low-level syntactic task, whereas with the second layer, the more high-level layer, you would get better performance on this more semantic word sense disambiguation task. And I think this, this as one particular finding was really exciting for me to read in that paper.
And so for folks that aren't as familiar with the paper, the main thrust or contribution of the paper was the architecture they proposed, or was it something else?
So the main contribution of that paper was essentially this kind of overall framework of using a kind of a state-of-the-art pre-trained language model and using that as features with learned scalar as a using the pre-trained representations or using a convex combination of the pre-trained representations as an input into a downstream model, and observing that those that this particular approach or this framework leads to exceptionally significant improvements on a wide variety of tasks like reading comprehension, named entity recognition, sentiment analysis.
Awesome, awesome. And that paper was by researchers at the Allen Institute. Is that right?
Exactly. So that was building on a paper they had last year where they used these similar language model representations just in as an input into a sequence labeling model. So most of the authors are from the Allen Institute or the University of Washington, with the lead author being Matthew Peters.
You know, all the papers we'll be talking about are relatively fresh. They just came out. But have you seen people yet extending this work? There's been a lot of conversation about this paper in the community.
So there's been, it's really been remarkable seeing the additional developments and really the interest in this overall direction. I personally had a paper with Jeremy Howard from FastAI where we proposed a similar idea, placing more emphasis on how we fine-tune these language models for different tasks. And then I think what has captured a lot of people's attention recently was a paper called BERT, so they from Google, where they pre-train essentially an even bigger model, so a deep transformer model that was previously proposed for machine translation on even a lot more data for a lot longer using a lot more TPUs. And they were able, just using a deeper model with some additional modifications, to outperform these previous results by a large margin again. So that really shows, so this paper I mainly highlighted as one example in this overall direction. And I think we'll probably be talking more about that in the kind of predictions for the next year. But I think there's still a lot of potential that is left untapped in this direction.
Awesome. Awesome. So what's next on your list?
So the next paper I want to mention is one in a line of essentially papers on unsupervised cross-lingual models. And I think the paper that is particularly interesting to mention here, which was also highlighted by the community before. So that one won Best Paper Award at in MNLP, another large NLP conference at the end of this year, is the paper Phrase-Based and Neural Unsupervised Machine Translation by a group of researchers from Facebook AI Research with Guillaume Lampel pioneering or spearheading that. And that paper was, to me in particular, interesting because there had been some earlier papers at ICLEAR this year, which basically proposed first this idea of unsupervised machine translation. So really, they proposed two papers independently proposed two models that were maybe not for the first time. I'm sure there's been some classic approaches before, but for the first time with these more recent deep neural network-based approaches, able to only given monolingual corpora in two languages. So so normally when you train a machine translation model, you really want to have a parallel corpus, which is a corpus that contains pairs of sentences in one language and their translation in the other language. And the models they proposed were just able to take these monolingual corpora, which were not aligned, and just by having these monolingual corpora learn an alignment and learn a translation model that is able to produce somewhat okay present translations. So in that paper, those papers were mainly proof of concept showing that this particular like framework or paradigm actually worked. And the results were still quite a bit ways below supervised approaches. And in this kind of extension or building on those ideas from earlier this year, this new paper kind of took those ideas and made them a lot more robust and useful in practice, in particular by using many ideas from classical statistical and phrase-based machine translation models and really getting those ideas to work and really show very good results on different data sets.
And so for this one, are the corpora parallel at, you know, for example, the document level, but just not aligned sentence or phrase by phrase? Or are they, you know, let's say random kind of collection of documents in one language and another random collection of documents in the other language?
So the corpora are mostly random collections of documents in both languages. So essentially, I think they crawled corpora, like news corpora online, or used unlabeled corpora that were previously available for machine translation research. So I think there's maybe some kind of topical alignment in that you have news corpora talking about different things, and probably my intuition would be that if you would train these models with totally with corpora coming from totally different domains, like biomedical and news corpora, they likely wouldn't do as well. Still, you don't really have any sort of alignment, or the corpora itself are really easy to collect, as you just need to scrape news corpora essentially.
Is there any indication that this kind of approach can extend beyond machine translation or cross-lingual tasks? Did we learn anything in this paper that is broadly applicable to unsupervised NLP tasks?
So what I really liked was that in the paper, in the beginning, they took some time essentially laying down kind of the three key requirements for this sort of unsupervised machine translation, which are, I think, in a sense, ones that are generally useful for many other unsupervised tasks in NLP. And these are, in particular, having a good initialization, doing something that allows you, so doing essentially language modeling, so something that allows you to get representations of the language, and having something that allows you to model the inverse task, or so in their case, they use back translation, which is a technique of getting, if you don't have or if you only have monolingual corpora available, to still get that this kind of alignment pair that you can train your supervised models on by just using your current state of your model to translate your monolingual data, and that's using that as kind of a like a weak supervision signal, effectively. And this sort of back translation essentially can be seen as it allows the model to, given only those data from one of the sources, really enforce something like a cyclical consistency. So it allows the model itself essentially to learn to be more consistent with itself. People in the computer vision community have seen similar ideas in CycleGAN, for instance, which can be seen as a similar idea where you have also non-parallel sets of images from different domains, and the model then learns to translate or to transfer one image from one of the domains to the other domain, basically, by also having this principle of doing this inverse modeling or enforcing this cyclical consistency. Okay. So I think this notion is really generally applicable. And then in particular as well, this notion of having good initialization that just allows you, because the optimization process in these unsupervised approaches can be really very noisy, or it can be very challenging optimization problem. So you really want to start out from as good of an initialization as possible. And in their case, they use essentially shared word piece vocabulary. But we've also seen, there was another paper at ACL that I particularly liked by Ateche and others, who proposes basically a better initialization for learning cross-lingual embeddings by effectively incorporating some sense of his domain knowledge of the problem, that words that are similar to each other in other languages have similar distributions of words they are similar to in turn. Yeah, I mean, we could talk more about this paper here, but I think we probably want to cover a few more.
Yeah. I think we could probably do whole shows on each of the papers you're talking about. But let's move on to the next one.
Cool. So the next one is, I think, it's also, I think, for me in line or an example of a larger trend that I found particularly interesting this year, which is kind of this increasing awareness of having to incorporate common sense into our models. So because many people have observed in different papers or different studies that the current models are brittle or in many different ways, so that they don't actually encode information that as humans we find plausible or that makes sense to us, so that they don't really have this notion of like causality or of common sense really. And in this line, there's been some efforts mainly on creating different data sets that allow us to train models that can exhibit some of these common sense inference mechanisms. And in that line, there's been some great work coming from the University of Washington, from Yijin Choi's group. So she had two papers on proposing two data sets, Event to Mind and SWAG, which in both instances create a task that tries to capture some of these commonalities. So for SWAG, for instance, they used captions from images to essentially create a multiple choice task where you have a sentence and then four possible subsequent sentences to that. And the model then has to decide which of those four possibilities is the most plausible one, or which is the actual one that would plausibly follow the current one. And what I particularly liked about their paper was that they really try to take some of the lessons we've seen recently, in that many of the previously proposed datasets exhibited different sorts of biases. So often the models trained on those were able to exploit some patterns in how the humans, how the human annotators generate the data, because often generally people who would enter those datasets are on Mechanical Turk. They don't have a lot of time, so they often try to take shortcuts, if possible, to just generate those examples faster. And those shortcuts would lead to some patterns in the data that a model would be able to exploit, and that would then kind of show this brittleness of these models that a lot of people have criticized. And in this SWAG paper, a very, very nice acronym as well. They took some measures to protect against these biases by proposing a new mechanism that uses some other models as well to more effectively select these possible negative answers in each example. And I think that's really a useful direction. And I think we'll probably see kind of in future dataset papers, at least some discussion of bias, and hopefully some measure or some means to prevent that prematurely.
Okay. Now, this is the formulation of their problem where they're where the prediction task comes before the contextual sentences. Is that unique or novel? Most of the time, the prediction task follows the contextual sentences. Is that right?
So typically you would have, it's kind of rare. So you have, like, in most cases in those Q&A datasets, you have some sort of like passage that they're reading and they try to select some answer based on that. Or you have some like challenging datasets in the past, like the Renograd schema, where you have a sentence and then you try to disambiguate a certain word in that sentence. Like, it's more kind of akin to word sense disambiguation in context. And in contrast to those, this dataset is more really about kind of this kind of notion of causality and really events that plausibly follow each other. So for instance, an example here, there's a sentence which describes that a woman takes a seat at the piano. So given that real world situation, is it more likely that the woman then in the next sentence plays with a doll? Does she just smile? Are there dancers in the crowd? Or does she actually put her fingers on the keys to play? So it's really, so this data set very much is about really understanding kind of these real world knowledge and understanding what kind of events follow each other in the real world.
Okay. And just to be clear, are the sample sentences like the ones you described in that order, where you get one or multiple contextual sentences and then the multiple choice? Or is it the other way around, where you the multiple choices, the context, and then you get the sentences that follow, and the task is to try to guess the context?
So it's the first way. So you first have the sentence and then you have the multiple choice questions.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood that.
Yeah, exactly. And there have been, there have been some other data sets before as well. I think there's one, the Lambada data set, and a lot of those are based on stories, which give you some sentences or a paragraph of a story, and then ask you to kind of decide either what is the next sentence or whether a certain what is a certain entity in the next sentence. So these are very kind of automatically generated based on stories. And in comparison to that, this one really emphasizes this kind of more event-based notion.
Cool. And so what's the next one on your list?
Cool, yeah. So the next one was something that flew a bit under people's radar mainly. So I found that particularly interesting because it combines semi-supervised learning. So learning essentially, so these previous approaches to transfer learning that I mentioned, they essentially learn from a large unlabeled corpus to get pre-trained representations. And semi-supervised learning in general often kind of assumes that the unlabeled data is from the target tasks you care about. So if you have a semi-supervised learning model, you might apply that to sentiment tasks, then you have some additional reviews in that domain, basically. And a lot of these transfer learning approaches can also be used in that setting. But this particular paper proposed some ideas that are complementary to these more language model-based representations, in that it explicitly encourages a model to be more robust on unlabeled data, basically. So the paper I'm talking about is the semi-supervised sequence modeling with cross-view training that was presented at MLP 2018 from Clark and collaborators. And they take some, so they're, yeah, so I can, you can see their paper in line of some recent semi-supervised learning approaches, mainly in computer vision. And in a lot of those approaches, models try to enforce some notion of consistency within the model's prediction on unlabeled data. So in a lot of cases, we had, I think in 2015, there was a paper called the Ladder Networks, and that essentially enforced that a model's prediction under noise. So if you have your original model and the model where you add noise to, the predictions of those two variants should be the same on unlabeled data. And then recently we've had some more similar approaches in that line, which try to make the model's predictions consistent with its predictions in the past. So some of these approaches are also called self-sampling approaches. So we can see that in this design of works. And this paper in particular proposed a very very simple framework, in that you have your, say, for an NLP task, you have your BILSTM encoder. You feed your sentence through that and get a prediction for your labeled example. So you still train that as normally on your labeled examples. And then on unlabeled example, you would again feed your input through that, and you would get a prediction on your unlabeled example. So this is the prediction of your main model. And then you would kind of iteratively or alternately obfuscate different parts of the input. So say if the input sentence was they traveled to Washington by plane in like a named entity recognition task, you would in one auxiliary model remove the last part of the sentence. So you would have an auxiliary model. You would only feed in they travel to into your BILSTM encoder and get another prediction. Then you would do that for other parts where you obfuscate other parts of the input, like they travel to Washington by plane. And for each of these auxiliary models, you would get a prediction based on the model only seeing parts of the input. And in the end, you would enforce those models, those losses, to be similar to the or consistent with the model seeing the full example. And that essentially enforces that the model is kind of less sensitive to some of these local features in the input, but really encourages the model to pay attention to particular words like travel, that actually travel highlights some highlights that traveling is to a location, and really makes the model also be able to learn from unlabeled data these useful patterns effectively.
It kind of reminds me of dropout in the language domain as opposed to in the network domain.
Exactly. So it's very similar to like a word dropout, essentially. So people have tried this like dropping out individual words in input rather than dropping out hidden states like in regular dropout. And so I think this is like very, very similar to that. And maybe the main difference is that in regular or in this word dropout, you're still mostly restricted to learning on labeled examples. So you can really only apply the dropout on just making your model more robust given the label data that you have. And with this additional objective, you can even, because you're not trying to predict a label, but just enforcing this sort of consistency, you can also apply that to unlabeled data.
Yeah, I think you've got a couple more papers yet, right?
Yeah, so I think maybe one of the last ones I'd like to mention is kind of in line with, I think, one of the broader or main challenges in NLP going forward, which is really making sense of very large documents. So you have that in summarization, for instance, where if you want to summarize a very large document, that is still something that current approaches struggle with. And similarly, if for, say, current question answering systems, most of those approaches are based on answering questions on a paragraph. And so really a kind of a direction and a challenge going forward is to expand this context from a paragraph to entire articles, and then hopefully to larger bodies of information, a collection of documents, or even whole narratives, like in books or movie scripts. And the paper in that line that I want to highlight here is from some researchers from DeepMind, the Narrative QA Reading Comprehension Challenge, that was published in Tackle, the Journal of Computational Linguistics. And this particular paper I like. So this paper also presented a new data set for question answering. And what I like particularly about this paper is that, so generally, if you So the dilemma really is that because current models really are only able to do really well on if you have a paragraph as input, if you want to propose a new dataset or a new challenge that requires models to answer questions based on entire books, that will be too difficult for current models. So you won't even be able to apply existing models to that just because the task is so much different to what we have. So you really want to have something that is both a kind of a challenge and like a more long-term direction, but something that also allows you to apply current models to the task. And I think they did a good job of striking the balance between those two extremes in that they had, as part of their data set, they proposed this kind of overall challenge of answering questions about books and movie scripts. But the questions, the way they obtained those were based on summaries of those movie scripts and of the books. So humans were provided with a summary of the book or of the movie script and had to generate possible question answer pairs based on that. So in the near term to make models so to make this task easier for models, they can then also be supplied with the summaries that were actually used to generate these question answer pairs, which makes it then more similar to existing datasets like Squat, and which allows the application of existing models to that. And then as we find that current models really are able to do very well in that, we can then essentially scale up the context, incorporating kind of the book or the movie script context as well to get closer to that overall challenge. And in particular in the paper, they also talk about, so one way that you can already try to leverage some of this, the entire content of the book, is to use it in a two-step way, where you first apply an information retrieval approach to that. So you first try to retrieve like relevant sentences based to the question from the entire book, and then use those for giving an answer. But as I say in the paper, that task, because in a book, book is not something you would typically apply IR to, and you'd have a lot of sentences that are very similar, and particularly when the question is about some main characters, you have many sentences talking about those. So it's still by itself even a very challenging IR problem.
What kind of experimental results did they present in the paper, if at all?
So essentially, they present results both on this kind of simplified setting where you answer questions based on the summary that the annotators use to generate the original questions. So to that setting, they just apply existing models, like existing state-of-the-art reading comprehension models that have achieved good performance on some of the other tasks. So they show those results and then basically propose this two-step approach for that I just mentioned for using the entire book and present some results for those as well, given different different baselines and different different encoder methods, as well as kind of looking if you had a perfect IR model, for instance, that would be able to give the most relevant sentences, given the answer, actually, how good the models would actually perform then. And in addition, they also simplify the task a bit or try to give like another simpler option of the task rather than generating the answer, selecting the answer from a candidate set of 30 different answers. So rather than having actually the more challenging task of generating the answer, you can just reduce it to a classification setting, which also in the near term might make it more accessible to do the sort of QA on full stories.
So some really interesting papers this year.
As I said here, I think there's been really a lot of very interesting, very diverse papers and a lot of very important directions as well.
Awesome. So our next category is tools and open source projects. What caught your eye here?
Cool. Yeah. So in that regard, kind of building on what we just discussed previously, I found personally most exciting was just those research groups really open sourcing good implementations of many of the papers that I just mentioned. So we had shortly after, for instance, the BERT paper, which is kind of the current state-of-the-art language modeling paper, came out, a TensorFlow version together with a collaboratory notebook demo of that, which people then ported into PyTorch. So you can use it in different frameworks, and other people already using that. So and similarly to that before, you had Elmo as well. So that being made very easily accessible in both NLP as well as in TensorFlow via TensorFlow Hub. And similarly, we also open sourced our OpenFit model in the FastAI library. And I think just this whole trend of really researchers and people not taking a lot of time to share their models with the community really allowed much of this recent kind of accelerated progress. And I think has really kind of captured a lot of imagination and really made it comparatively easy now for people to actually put their ideas into practice and apply them. And similarly, I was also really excited to see here the groups from Ateche and from Facebook sharing the implementations of unsupervised machine translation, because also I think that is really very promising, particularly for low resource languages. And I'm personally really excited to see how people are going to build on those implementations and really use them and apply them to their own applications. And and another thing that I just wanted to mention here, so those were just kind of more research paper, open source implementations of those. And another trend that I particularly liked this year, or just another development I liked, was the one particular tool, this Google dataset search. So I haven't used that tool much recently yet, or it doesn't seem that to have that great coverage yet for many NLP data sets, or many of the most commonly used ones in academia at least. But I think it's an instance kind of a larger trend of really making kind of the lifeblood of the current models that we have, this the data sets that we need to train and evaluate the models, really more easily accessible, and placing those really at the fingertips of a lot of people. And I think just that having like this data set search engine, as well as some other resources. So there have been some great lists online on collections of data sets recently, and also for NLP. I, together with other people, we've worked on compiling a repository of a collection of different data sets, as well as state-of-the-art results in natural language processing as well. And there's been some cool extensions and more work in that direction recently. So I think overall, for me, that's been really useful direction of just making those data sets and this knowledge of what is actually the current state-of-the-art and the current models that are being used more accessible to the wider community.
Oh, that's great. You mentioned that this Google data set search isn't very up to date on NLP results. Is it manually curated, or is it, is it kind of a search engine? And what do you suppose is the causing the lag?
Yeah, so I think it's mostly, I'm not exactly sure how it works under the hood. I think data sets, so people who host data sets online or so, they can embed some JavaScript or some schema pattern into their file, which would allow the data set search to pick up on that. But I'd be happy to be corrected on that. I'm not entirely sure where. I think it's my guess it would be automatic, but I'm not entirely sure how it works under the hood. Mm-hmm. I've just observed, it's as well kind of related to that. Not all of the data sets have public pages. So a lot of the data sets are still, you still have to go to research papers to track down the links, or actually, in some cases, maybe even reach out to the authors if there's some particular copyright on the data set. So I think in many cases, it's still not that standardized, which would maybe make it easier for the search engine to pick up on the particular data sets. But I'm hopeful that going forward it will be easy, like coverage of a tool like that will be broader, or that we'd have other tools that make it easier.
Jumping into the next category, commercial development, you had a particular announcement or new product in mind.
So regarding the commercial development, I think the most striking development this year for me, or the one I was really most excited about, was here from Google. The demo they showed of Google Duplex, which was their assistant, effectively using Google Assistant to talk and make appointments or perform certain tasks related to making appointments with restaurants or the hairdresser. So in very kind of narrow scenarios. And following that, there were some issues around privacy and concerns about the bot actually sharing that it is not human operated, but that it is actually a bot. So I think there's still some issues to be addressed around that. But more broadly, I found that really really great demonstration of, a particular use case where these sort of dialect technologies can have a big impact in the near term, which is really focusing on narrow, mostly well-defined domains that you can, where you can mostly enumerate most of the potential scenarios or most of the potential interactions that you can have, and where you can then apply these models to really make people more productive or efficient in general.
Yeah, that was absolutely a stunning demo. And it sounds like they've rolled it out in at least some limited way this past month, maybe?
I've only heard in the US that it might take place there. I think here in Europe, we probably have to wait a bit longer for that.
Awesome. And then you've got a couple quick points on kind of top application areas for the year. What caught your eye in terms of the way folks are putting all this research to work?
Regarding application areas, I think the most impactful for me this year in like a societal and context really was anything related to dealing with news, and in particular combating the fake news problem that has received a lot of attention recently. And in particular, there's been new startups and initiatives like FactMatter, for instance, in London, who are really working closely with journalists to fight these problems. There's been more increased attention in the community, for instance, as part of different workshops. So there was a workshop on fact extraction and verification, which really tried to define, because in most of these cases, really the first step to combating that is really to build data sets first that allow us to train these models and sharing those with the community. So workshops like that, or similarly, there's a shared task next year on hyper-partisanship detection. So I think initiatives like that will really go a long way themselves. And in addition, so news was also on my personal radar, just because of the work I've been doing here at Alien on news analysis. And relation extraction is also really something that we're more trying to focus on as well. And I think, now fake news, maybe besides addressing additional bias in models that are trained on NLP tasks, I think is really one of the directions NLP can have the biggest impact in society.
That's become a clear area of opportunity for these kinds of for NLP in general. So definitely agree with that one. Before we run out of time, I'd love to get your take on some predictions for 2019. Where do you think the biggest opportunities lay for NLP researchers and practitioners?
Cool. Yeah. So I think, for me personally, I think the biggest opportunities are around transfer learning in general. So really As I mentioned before, these sort of pre-trained representations we're having right now. I think with those we are still very much at the start. There's still I think a lot of potential that we can leverage there. And in particular, I think just for researchers or kind of practitioners who want to work with those and have their own impact in that direction. I think, people shouldn't be discouraged by, I mean, now you've seen with these recent approaches that, like, I think BERT was trained on, like, 64 TPU pods on, I think, 4 or 5 days or something. So I think people shouldn't be, and even that model was now the state of the art. I think people shouldn't be discouraged by these these data or compute requirements. And I think there's a lot of directions that still don't require you to have that access to that much compute. So for instance, in just better understanding what these models actually capture and what they, if they can, if they allow us to capture things like common sense or not, and what those representations actually look like, I think that's really exciting direction. And then just applying those models to different tasks, essentially. And then related to that, I think with understanding how, like, what they can and can't capture, I think there's really a lot of room for just learning and creating representations that address those particular deficiencies. So for instance, there was a recent cool paper I liked from people at Facebook AI Research where they learned dedicated pre-trained representations for word pairs. Yeah, so word pairs, just how two words relate to each other in general. Yeah, and these representations are quite useful for tasks like entailment or even question answering, where you try to relate words in the question to the words in the paragraph, words in the hypothesis to words in the premise. Because your model in the end has to do some cross-sentence inference, essentially. And I think really figuring out what is the task you care about and what is something that that is necessary for that task to do well on it, and how can you capture that and learn that with representations, I think is really, like, overall really a useful direction. Personally, we have in computer vision and a lot of other disciplines, things like model zoos, where people have access to different sorts of pre-trained models, like different types of pre-trained ImageNet models. And recently, we've seen people combining different forms of word embeddings and actually showing that different forms of word embeddings, so word embeddings from Word2Vec and Glove and other ones, have complementary information to each other. So I think going forward, one thing that we'd probably see is just having a lot more of these pre-trained representations that encode particular information relating to syntax, semantics, and other aspects that then people can effectively mix and match and combine for their relative tasks.
Oh, that's really interesting. We spoke quite a bit about transfer learning in NLP and the embedding stuff as well in the previous interview that I'd refer folks back to. But I can definitely see us kind of continuing to make progress down this path. It's been pretty astounding what we've seen this year.
Yeah, I totally agree. And the second direction I just want to quickly highlight here is that we've seen this year just a lot more attention on the importance of evaluating things like on multiple languages, and more people are working on kind of multilingual and cross-lingual applications. So I think I'm really confident, or hopeful at least, that we'll see more of that next year, particularly looking at low resource languages. And people combining, kind of learning some of these representations in a cross-lingual way, so that you have a model like the recent kind of BERT multilingual model that was trained on a lot of languages, and that allows then application or almost zero-shot learning for a lot of these other languages.
So do you have some kind of top predictions, specific predictions for 2019 or the near future?
In terms of specific predictions, I think So we'll see, well, it's kind of hard to be like particularly specific. I mean, we'll see a lot more of, like, I think almost every paper that is going to achieve state of the art on a particular NLP task will use some form of contextual or pre-trained representations. That's pretty certain. Besides that, I would hope that if you look at like keywords of language, like of words mentioned in different papers, you would see at least an increase in other languages being mentioned. So that's another one. I think it's kind of hard to be like too much more specific than that.
It sounds like the thrust of your predictions are in these kind of two main directions: more cross-language work, more attention to using transfer learning.
Yeah, I mean, and like I think anything that I mentioned before, so also the work on common sense inference, reasoning with large documents, I think all of those could really be kind of their own predictions or their own directions in the future as well. So I would personally expect to see more work in those related directions as well. And similarly, I would expect or hope to see more work generally on just developing kind of more general semi-supervised learning algorithms for different NLP tasks.
Any other thoughts on what we might expect to see in the coming year?
So I just want to kind of call out a few just initiatives and organizations that I think are really worth watching in the next year as well. And I'm personally really excited about kind of local initiatives that are spearheading and evangelizing machine learning and AI, and particularly for kind of underrepresented groups. So particularly, I think the deep learning DABA and the team behind that, which is an initiative to strengthen machine learning in Africa, has been doing some amazing work. And related to that, also, there's been the Black in AI workshop at NRIPS this year has really had an amazing attendance. Or similarly, there's been queer and Latinx in AI. So I think, I really find it amazing and really fruitful to see these initiatives really getting more support and getting kind of a wider attendance and strengthening. And and kind of similar to that, personally being in Europe as well, I found it exciting that there's been some local European initiatives, Alice and Claire in particular, which try to bring Europeans more closely together in kind of a joint joint organization or joint association effectively. And then I hope to see more work in the coming year from really like open source initiatives, people open sourcing more work, and in particular things from FastAI, for instance, which have really been doing amazing work both on educating many people as well as even publishing very high impact research in both in computer vision as well as natural language processing.
Well, Sebastian, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me and review this past year and what we should expect for 2019. Definitely an exciting time in NLP.
Cool. Great. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right, everyone. That's our show for today. For more information on Sebastian or any of the topics covered in this episode, visit twimlai.com/216. You can also follow along with our AI Rewind 2018 series at twimlai.com/rewind18. As always, thanks so much for listening and catch you next time. Happy holidays.